This is an ABC podcast.
Roots and Shoots with Amber and Sabrina on ABC Radio Perth and WA and the ABC Listener.
Reunited and it feels so good.
Well, that'll drive people outside, if nothing else.
That was good singing, wasn't it?
I thought you were going to sing another song, so I was in entirely different key.
Which one was it?
Can't remember now.
Starts with
Speaking
Re,
of
though,
worms.
Speaking Head of worms in your brain. We were just
worms
talking
in your brain.
To Dr. Worm.
We were. Now, I'm so excited. I spent the whole week not doing the stuff that I was meant to do because I spent the entire week in the garden and beavered away until I could barely walk in through the back door.
Which is how you got to do it.
Got a whole pile of delivery of poo and pee hay and hooked in.
So, yeah. So what? Tell me blow by blow what you got done.
Well, first of all, I went and bought a whole pile of plants and then I went, damn, now I've got to take some out to put some in, move some, put some in pots. Every year I go, I'm not going to have any more pots, and every year they just increase. But because it's perfect gardening weather, you got to get up and the birds wake me up. You go up and you go, what birds have I got today? So the willy wagtails are nesting in the big fiddlewood tree and they're having a crack at the wattlebirds and the wattlebirds are having a crack at the magpies and then the magpies have a go at something else. The pink and grey galahs are having a crack at those mongrel bloody rainbow lorikeets, which I still want to shoot but not allowed to. So all this is going on. There's mayhem in the garden and you go, I've got to get out there and be part of it.
Got to get out there and be part of it. Go and buy some new things to put in and take some old things out. So the old things go into pots. Is that what I'm hearing?
Some of them go into pots and other ones go into my neighbour's garden because if I haven't got room, I gorilla garden her front. She doesn't seem to notice that I've put in 20 plants. But that's okay.
She's not stealing them. I mean,
it's exactly right.
Free.
Seems a shame to let them die, so I just go and plant them in other people's gardens.
Oh, that's such a lovely thing to do.
Thing to do.
It is. This is Roots and Shoots, and you are listening to Sabrina
Babylon
and
about the excitement.
Amber Cunningham. Yes. Sam is in South Frio. Hello, Sam.
Hello. Lucky first today.
Oh, you are. I wish we could give you a prize.
We are the prize.
Oh, we are the prize.
Well, you're the prize.
Well, I was about to say, some healthy grevilleas would be a lovely prize.
Oh, they're very yellow.
They're very yellow.
Oh, you're in Fremantle.
Yes. I would have said that they're probably iron deficiency. I have treated them so many times. I've tried powdered sulphur. I've done iron chelate. I've done some green decks. I've done iron decks. I've tried lots of different things.
Now, the unfortunate thing is, Sam, it depends on the biology of the soil as to whether the plants can uptake those nutrients. They're really unhappy, aren't they? So they are in a lot of limestone. And personally, I don't think it matters how much of that stuff you pour on. They are the wrong grevilleas for high pH soil.
Oh.
Okay. Even though, like, bad the ones news that were meant to be for coastal conditions.
Yeah, but
like honey gem and moonlight.
Well, honey gem definitely is not. You've got limestone everywhere and you're probably on caprock limestone as well. And that just permeates through the soil. So it's an ongoing thing. I would suggest you get Grevillea City Lights.
Okay.
Because I've got a pH of about, not me personally, but the soil ranges between 8.5 and 9.8. So I have that major problem with grebs as well. But City Lights is a really good alternative for that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want something that's taller, I'd go for Ruby Dream.
which grows beautifully in my high pH soil. I also have a borer, which is alkaline, and they do really well. There's another one called Strawberry Sunday.
Oh, yep.
Does really well. Yeah, so, and Grevillea Gingin Gem.
Yep. One of them is that, and it's still yellowing.
Oh, really? Have you done a pH test?
Yeah, I have. I've done plenty, and mine sort of comes around at about 8.5, I thought.
Yeah, yeah. But it's where the root system, when it hits limestone, that's the – you might be better off with Melaleucas.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm trying everything and throwing everything at it. I can see there looks like some fungal issues with some as well.
Yeah.
So I don't think the wet weather has helped.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Okay, so aside of setting fire to it all and moving, I think that sounds like your best hope. Oh, Sabrina's about to die off microphone. No. Sam, I'm sorry about your grevilleas. Mm. Hope we have helped. Well, Sabrina has helped.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sam. Brian is in St. James. Hello to you, Brian.
Hi, Amber. How you going, Sabrina?
Ladies
are fighting fit and dangerous.
Ah, oh, we are on fire, my friend, on fire. I've got a shovel in my hand as we speak.
Oh, I better watch what I say then. I was wanting to pick. Oh, by the way, what about the black-faced cuckoo shrike? They sit in the background and look at those nests and see which ones they can hop in when there's no one around.
Raid.
Lay their egg and then, nasty things.
Well, that's life when you're a bird.
Yeah, well, cuckoo shrikes are, a bit naughty. My question is about, well, I want to pick your memory, Sabrina. Are you finding...
Good luck.
Potting? I'm finding any potting mix I'm using now, whether it's expensive or not so expensive.
Yep.
It seems to become mud quite quickly in a pot, whereas in the past it tended to stay friable and loose for at least maybe 2 or 3 years.
Yep.
And my second question related to that, is it worthwhile putting in extra wood chips?
Okay, so you've hit the nail on the head there, Brian. What's happened with potting mix is there is a drastic shortage of pine bark. And they use pine bark in all the potting mix because it helps aerate and it's finely chopped. And about, I think, probably five to 7 years ago, all the horties were saying, what are we going to do? Because we're going to run out of pine mulch, and what are we going to put in our potting mix? So they're putting more cocoa peat in. And that's why it's retaining and going quite mushy. So I actually mix perlite or vermiculite in my potting mix, and that assists in all the free draining, gives the air pockets that you need for root development. So a little bit of compost and some perlite or vermiculite will really help.
Okay, thanks very much. Have a good day, guys.
Okay, thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian. Now, Helen says, I have a flying ant's nest in the roots of my succulent garden. Oh. How do I get rid of them?
You don't. They're a marvellous thing. So they come out at this time of the year and they develop wings for a very short period of time, and then they drop their wings and they become just normal ants. So you don't need to do anything. They won't be there for long. They just emerge out of the soil en masse. And it's a fabulous thing to watch, actually. So, I wouldn't worry about it. I would just film it and go, look at nature happening before my very eyes. What a marvellous thing.
The joys of spring. Put it down to spring.
And the willy wagtails who are all nesting now will go and knock off about 100 in one go, and then they get so fat they can't fly up to their nest.
Oh. Somebody has sent us a text with a screenshot of the Wonders of Our Wetlands Festival, which is happening today at the Kudanup foreshore.
In Mandurah.
There you go. I'm glad you knew where that was.
Well, that's because I sent that to you. I snuck it in.
I think you are. You're the host. You're not a listener. And the Aussie bird count.
Now,
you want us to know about that as well.
Now Western Australia has an appalling record of whether we, you know, how many birds we put in this state. So there's a thing called the Great Aussie Bird Count. We do it every year.
Billow, come back. Sabrina wants a coffee. Billow.
It's too late. It's all right. I've got to try too. So the Great Aussie Bird Count's on every year. Now what it is you, for 20 minutes each day for 1 week, you keep a record of the birds you hear or see. This goes into a national body, so it's one of the biggest what do you call it? What's your coffee order? Just white, thanks, Bilo. White, just whatever a white coffee's called. Like a white cappuccino, white flat.
Flat.
A flat white. Well, but don't mind us. We're having breakfast here. Now, the Aussie bird count goes from the 20th to the 26th of October. You have to just Google Aussie bird, Great Aussie Bird Count. You must register. There is an app. The app is fantastic. It gives you pictures of birds, the sounds of birds. Doesn't matter if you don't know what they are. You've got an app to find out. Now, the reason the Great Aussie Bird Count is important is because one in five birds are becoming extinct. So we need to know what's happening to the population of our birds, particularly in urban areas. And it's great fun. So you can do it at night time. You can do it in the day. You can do it at the school. You can go to your local park. You can do what I do. You have a day session and then you're up at 2 in the morning because that's when you wake up apparently, and you can hear owls. So So please get involved. Great get Aussie involved. Bird Count. Come
do
on.
Do these things. Community-minded. Citizen science. Graham
yes,
is in Guelph.
That was hello. The word I was looking for, citizen hello. Science.
Hello, Graham.
Hello, Graham.
Hello. Good to hear you this morning. Look, I've got a good lot of crop of apricots coming, and I want to know the best way of taking fruit fly control. What can you recommend, please?
The only thing that is going to work, Graham, is exclusion bags or exclusion cloth on the whole tree or on the branches that have the fruit. It is the only thing for apricots
right.
that will work.
I've got it all covered with a whole screen right over the whole lot, like a Christmas tree at the moment.
Yes.
I wondered about whether to put any pots inside that maybe, if they do get inside, to affect them. I know one time you recommended a mixture of something to use, but I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, you can make traps with... So definitely hang up your traps. There's so many different recipes for traps. Don't use the one that uses horse urine. It's very difficult to get hold of.
Right.
Or your own. Well, your own. Well, your own, but better off if it's
Ooh.
A female that's got diabetes and is postmenopausal. That one works the best. Actually, that's my sister. She'd fit into that. I might ring her up.
Microphone and
see. See if she wants to earn a bit of spare cash.
Yeah.
Now, honestly, Graham, there's lots of different recipes. Vegemite and water, apple cider vinegar, all that sort of stuff. Definitely hang up traps as well.
Right, that's what I thought.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Vegemite and water and something like that. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for that, Graham.
Thank you, Graham.
A little bit of concern around our flying ants, termites.
Yeah. Actually, I can't remember.
Oh, no.
No, I don't think they are.
Let me Google that.
You Google that while I chat to someone else.
Let me put someone up. How about I press a button?
Yeah, you press a button and give me someone. Patrice.
Patrice is in Goolwa Beach. Hello, Patrice.
Hello, Patrice.
Good morning, only just now that it's daylight saving.
You guys are on daylight saving today.
Yes, it's 10 to 12 here.
Oh, bummer. Now I've got to be careful when I ring all Morellis over East. Well, that's probably why my daughter rang me at 4:30 a.m. this morning. That's a fairly good indication that daylight saving has started.
You would only just got to bed.
No, I was actually up.
She was up in the garden.
What can we do for you today, Patris?
Look, my neighbour a couple of years ago gave me a heap of rock lily bulbs.
Yeah.
And I just whacked them in the ground and forgot about them.
Yeah.
And they're actually going absolutely bunter.
Oh.
Little part of my garden out the front.
Yeah.
Can I dig them up and separate them and plant them along my driveway?
Of course you can. But you're going to start heating up soon. I wouldn't be doing it now, Patris. I would wait until the weather. I'd wait until the end of March.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I wouldn't do it before summer.
Okay.
Well, give it a crack, Patris, as long as you water it. As long as you water them, you should be okay.
Yeah, and they only get rainwater, so the best.
Ah, well, I want to come and play in your garden. Rainwater is the best.
Don't get too excited. And Brooke says hello.
And what, sorry?
Brooke says hello. Brooke.
Ah, Brooke. Hello, Brooke. How are you, mate? All right, well, so if you can do it now if you're not going to get temperatures above, say, 34 degrees in the next couple of weeks.
There you go.
Right. Oh, yeah, that now will be right then here in Goolwa.
Okay.
Good on
Perfect.
You, mate.
You Thanks. Go right ahead then, Patris. That'll be your weekend chore.
Thanks, Patris. Now, after a bit of cursory Googling on the flying ant versus white ant situation, I think the best thing to do is to get one on a bit of sticky tape and send it into the department. My pest guard reporter. There
I don't think – I know there are flying ants that aren't termites, but I know that some termites at different times will get wings as well. I seriously would not worry about it, but
There seems to be a flying ant day that it's
yeah
that
they
first
do they all emerge out
weather.
Of the out of the soil, and they are not termites though.
There we go.
They are ants.
So here's some kind of pest control website. What are these winged bugs? Is there a flying ants day in Australia? Why does it happen? How can you deal with it? Yes, it's a natural event.
Yeah.
What are they? Let's have a look. No, I'm going to go to something else now. We're going to have a chat to Carl, who is in Byford. Hello, Carl.
Oh, good morning, ladies.
Good morning, Carl.
Yeah, I've got a problem with a couple of trees where the graft roots, well, the graft is sort of at the point where it joins a rootstock, is overgrowing and forming like a gigantic callus.
Yeah, so that is quite a common thing with some grafts where the rootstock is actually more vigorous than the graft.
Well, this seems to be the reverse of that, where it just, well, the rootstock is staying fairly small, and then there's like a massive callus, almost like a gall.
Yes.
And in the case of the Granny Smith graft, it's starting to look a bit unhealthy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it could actually be a gall. It could be crown gall, Carl, and that is not going to be good. So. Can you prune your apple back a bit?
That is an option.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, where this is forming is about 2 inches from the ground. If I prune that back, basically, I haven't got a tree anymore.
Right.
I've only got the rootstock.
Okay, so it sounds to me like a gall.
Yeah.
It depends on what's caused the gall, whether it's insect, fungus, bacteria. But usually it's not a good sign.
Okay.
Now, what about your mulberry tree?
The mulberry tree, well, it's got a similar thing, and I wonder, well, what has happened? But that mulberry tree is still vigorous and healthy.
Yep.
It bears bowls and bowls of these quite long, sweet red fruit that, you know, on a tree that's never grown more than 2 metres tall. So
right.
Yeah, but But the Granny Smith is
so that's been grafted on a dwarf rootstock. So that's cool. Sometimes, yes. Sometimes the graft, if the graft is incompatible with what's been grafted on top of it, then you will get these bulbous graft growths, and you see it quite often on pear trees, in particular pears and apples. Not much you can do about it, really. So,
oh, there we go. And Carl is in Byford. Hello, Carl. What's your question?
No,
for Sabrina?
we've just done him.
Oh, we've done Carl. Sorry.
Yep.
Jeanette is in. I'm trying to do two things at once, and as you can see, not doing it super well.
It doesn't matter.
Jeanette is in Kelmscott,
doing a marvellous job. Hello, Jeanette.
Oh, good morning, Sav and Amber. I took her advice and I've planted out my verge, and some mongrel's gone and stole my plants.
Do you know, Jeanette, that
yes.
This is now becoming a common occurrence in my suburb? It's happening all around the suburb where people are stealing stuff from their verge, from their front veranda, pots on their front veranda.
Mm,
and I think it's just, you know, I think of people that plant out their front verge, they're doing it to create a habitat.
To
get more biodiversity in our urban areas.
Exactly.
And people that come and, you know, the likelihood of those plants surviving that they dig up and put in their own garden is really minimal. And I hope that bad karma and juju comes upon them. But unfortunately, people look at the cost of plants and then they go, well, I can get them for free.
Yeah.
The only thing you can do is to set up sensor lights and tell them that they're being filmed, but they usually come in a hoodie and and, you know, you can't fence your verge off.
No.
You know, if we could have perhaps some nice King Brown snakes out there.
Ooh.
But they usually sleep at night.
That
Jeanette,
might help.
All you can do, that happened to me when I first moved in, and I just put a little sign on the front verge saying, my verge is for everyone.
Oh.
But it's also to create habitat, and I didn't have a problem after that.
Oh, wow.
Okay, I might do that. And just before I go, a quick question.
Yes.
My leucodendrons are finished flowering. Can I cut the heads off?
You most certainly can, Jeanette. You cut each flowering head off, think about cutting the hands off of the little thieves that are stealing your plants.
A mongrel's, eh?
It's a medieval punishment. Jeanette, hope that helps.
Thank you.
You are so welcome. Now, Marilyn is in Applecross, and Marilyn also has a photographic memory. And so I'm very keen to know about this. You texted in earlier. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, Marilyn. Oh, sorry.
Yes.
No, girls, just so you know, I'm a bit of a space cadet because I'm on those bloody strong Plexias.
Oh.
Because I broke my fanny bone down at Hamlin Bay 2.5 weeks ago.
Well,
I was going to say,
if you're going to break your fanny bone anywhere, Hamlin Bay is a beautiful place to do
it,
Marilyn.
It was gorgeous. Anyway, Sabrina, you know who I am. Amber, you do. And just so you know, I was going down on a mission to spread Wayne's ashes.
Yes.
Atlantean man.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you have a gardening question for Sab?
I do, darling. Sabrina?
Yes.
I've got a little patch that gets full sun and I want to put a fast-growing, easy-to-look-after couple of natives.
Yeah.
That will be pretty, will attract the bees and the birds, and it does get full sun.
Yes.
I'm going to get rid of the grass.
Yep, perfect.
And I know what to do there.
Yep.
So what would you recommend?
Okay, please? I would put in some grevilleas because they are fast and you get lots of beautiful birds. and wattle, like the, or actually Adenanthus obovatus, and any of the grevilleas are sensational.
And now we have brought in the big guns on the flying ant question. We have Dr. Daryl Hardy, a.k.a. Dr. Bugalug. Sabrina, could you please phrase this question so that Daryl knows best how to answer it?
Oh, Daryl, we've missed you. You need to come in.
You do.
Because,
yeah, well.
Because I remember the first time I saw flying ants emerging out of the ground, and there were thousands of them, and it was so exciting. So the question was asked, were they ants or were they termites? And the ones that I saw, I'm pretty sure were ants, not termites.
Yep. Okay, so they can be both.
Yep.
And usually, so what you're seeing is thousands of queens and a few drones coming out. So they look like liquid as they come out of the ground. So both termites and ants do it. So it's telling you that spring is here and they're going to do their nuptial flights and they'll mate and then the drones will die and the queen ant or termite will actually fly along, find a spot, drop its wings and start a colony. But remember, ants are ants and termites aren't ants. Termites are actually related to cockroaches.
No!
Amber's not big on cockroaches.
How can you tell the difference?
Between an ant and a cockroach, a termite and a cockroach.
You should see the withering look she's coughing right now. Her face just melted off.
How can you tell the difference between the ants that get wings and termites that get wings? Is it hard?
It is hard. Usually the termites, well, I could say they're larger, but they're not always the case. If put it this way, if they're small, then they're probably ants, not termites. But that's not a general. That's just most. Well, that's a general, but not all the time. But remember, there's about over 150 species of termites in Western Australia, and only about five or six are actually damaged buildings and things like that. The rest of them are fantastic because they're recyclers. They actually chew up the cellulose and digest it and recycle it. So without
But not only
like
that,
termites,
they're food for other things as well.
Exactly. The little numbat and things like that.
Yep.
You know, they're into the termites and ants, So fantastic.
So what would you suggest to people? Because they're all going to start coming out now. So what would you suggest to people to do? Which hopefully will be nothing.
Of the thousands that emerge, only one or two will form a colony, probably. If you have your house inspected and have termite controls in, then not really a problem. A lot of I'm sitting in the back garden of my place, and we have a house that's not attacked by termites. But in the garden, if I leave any timber laying around, it will get attacked. So, so they're part of the environment.
Yep.
And unless they're attacking your house, leave them alone because they're into recycling and they're, as you said, food for other animals.
Very wise and very sage advice, Doctor.
Daryl, I'm going to put you back to Asher and she can interrogate you as to your availability to come on the show. ASAP.
You mean I can't sit in my garden on a warm Saturday?
Don't whinge.
I have to come into that cold studio.
Don't whinge. Right, I have to do it every Saturday, Daryl.
All right. I surrender. I will come in.
Good
okay.
man.
Thank you for the emergency treatment or advice.
Great.
Thanks, Daryl. That was Dr. Daryl Hardy, a.k.a. Dr. Bugalugs. Sean is in, where are you, Sean? Les Murdy. Hi, Sean. Sean is on the one. Hello, Sean.
G'day. I just wanted to add to that termite thing.
Yes.
Like the big fly-off of the termites when the sky fills up with bugs will be in a few days, really.
How exciting.
A trough will develop off the coast.
Yep.
And you'll smell the sky and you'll go, smells like summer, feels like summer.
Oh.
And then late in the afternoon, the sky will fill up with the termites, and they float, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Float and drift around.
Yep.
And we live up in Les Murdy, so the sky up here fills with them late in the afternoon.
Wow.
And that's a beautiful sight.
If you want to go and track down your termite nest, that's the time to do it. They'll form a little mud tower.
Yes.
And then that'll be where they take off from.
That is sensational, Sean. Thank you so much. I love it when our listeners call in with all their expertise and educate all of us.
Mm. Thank you, Sean.
All right, cheers.
See okay, you. Thanks, Sean.
And Leslie is in Albany, one of my favourite parts of the world. Hi, Leslie.
Oh, good morning, ladies. Fantastic show. Thank you.
Oh, we do our best.
Sue's cross at us.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she said we're not getting on with it.
Oh, come on, Sue. Let's share a little. You're obviously not having a good morning.
Anyway, Leslie, get on with it.
Oh, don't do this to me again.
I'm so sorry. I don't mean it.
Yes, you do. I've had bulbs
yes.
in my garden.
Yes.
About two or 3 years. And this year, I didn't get any flowers. I didn't get any daffodils. And I did ring up before, and it was the other lady, and she said, pull them out, too much nitrogen, and that was it. I thought, oh dear.
Oh, no, that's not going to make your day. No, because what happens is we have different seasons with different temperatures. Sometimes the bulbs actually rot in the ground, especially if you've had late rain. Not winter rain, but sort of later rain where the soil temperature is a bit warmer. It depends really with bulbs. A lot of it's on the climate and what you feed them after flowering before they die down. So that's the most important time to fertilize is after flowering, because all those resources, because they'll still have the leaves, goes into making the new bulb for next year.
Don't give up.
Don't give up. Don't give up. That's it.
Thanks for that, Leslie.
I knew Sabrina would have a better answer.
Yeah. You're a good sport. Thank you, ma'am. Now, this is our new segment, Boots and Utes, where we hand over to community reporter Christine Layton. Today she's going to take you for a trip to the Australian Native Nursery in Oakford. That's 35 minutes south of Perth. And where she spoke to former Navy chief and cancer survivor Matt Loney, who runs a gardening course for veterans dealing with complex PTSD. And the results have been radical.
This is my fave. It's an Anisea baronia. It's adaptable. It grows pretty much anywhere you want to throw soil. But what I like about it is it flowers all year round in those little pink flowers. But when you actually grab it where it gets wet, it smells just like licorice.
Matt's nickname is Red. He wears colourful, abstract patterned shirts. And we're sitting in a shed that looks out over the nursery, and he knows all of the plants by name and personality. But his start at ANN came after one of the most challenging times of his life.
My early days in Navy, I loved it. Loved it. I went on patrol boats. I opted to go to patrol boats up in Darwin. I like that close-knit crew type thing. I was never one of the blokes that was mainstream. Patrol boats was like a little specialty thing. And I also wanted to see what all this hoo-ha about illegal immigrants was with Operation Resolute.
Operation Resolute started back in 2006 under the Howard Liberal government with an aim to stop illegal immigrants, drug importation, security and biosecurity risks. I asked Matt what he saw during his time, and he paused.
I didn't have to. I know friends that have had to pick up deceased people out of war. I never picked up any deceased people out of war or anything like that. As a chef, you become the medic on board, or the ship's medical emergency team, so you deal with all the sicknesses and injuries and things like that. And I think what got me was I saw a lot of sick kids and stuff out there, and it really, really, I'll try not to swear, it really screwed with my brain in the end. You see some strange stuff. Some really strange stuff goes on out there, and people don't realise just how bad you can get. Like, how low you can get in life to need to come to illegally immigrated countries.
And like so many veterans with PTSD, those mental images can't be deleted. Red hit rock bottom not once, but twice.
The first one was when they discharged me from the Navy. So I was diagnosed in 2016 with the post-traumatic. And in 2020, that's when it got to the point where I was causing that much trouble at home with my mood swings. I don't know how my wife put up with it, but I just couldn't do it anymore. I said, that's it. I can't do this. So I did what they call mat training. I did what I had to do the second time it happened in 23. Once again, I just went out of control for some reason. I was still having nightmares, and yeah, I just... My wife found me, and she was right. She stopped me, so it was good.
So how do you describe post-traumatic stress disorder to someone who has never experienced it before?
You become very, I suppose the word's reclusive. I can't do big crowds. You're that bloke that sits in the corner of the restaurant because you don't want anyone to be behind you. You're always hyper-vigilant on the awares, and you'll have really big up and down days. Well, in my case, I have big up and down days.
And folks, this is where the gardening comes in.
So when I discharged from the Navy, I qualified for what's called TPI, but I didn't want to do it, which is totally permanently incapacitated, so never work again. I wasn't ready for that. I needed to do something. So we did a little questionnaire to sort out what would suit my circumstances now. I came up with three options. It was bartender, land and park manager, or nursery hand, you know, working with plants. So I came down and saw Nancy and asked if I could do what's called a shadow day. At the end of the day, I was really relaxed. I said to Nancy, hey, can I come back and do it again? And she said, how about we give you a job?
And Red fit the team like a glove. Nancy Skade, who founded the nursery 25 years ago, noticed that Red had quite a talent. So, using this, they started a mental health course for veterans. Here's how it happened.
They had no idea how many veterans were coming through the gates. So I'd be picking people going, he's army, he's not. You sort of get to know each other. You can pick them. And so all these people were coming through, and Nancy didn't realise that people were using gardening like I am. We just put together a course and said, let's help more people. Rog put this shed up for us, and we started creating the Veterans Garden and the Veterans Course.
It runs for 5 weeks and covers propagation, cutting, pruning, designing a garden. And those who come also bring a soil sample from home so Red can match them up with plants that suit. But there's no pressure.
Well, you had one bloke that just loves to weed. He therapeutically weeds gardens. So we'd be walking along, he'd be walking and picking the weeds out. And I go, what are you doing, mate? He goes, I'm weeding. I go, just let's go. We've got to learn some pruning, you know? And then they come back and they can see their plants. We've got a heap of plants that are growing. And I send photos out to them and go, this is the plant that you've propagated, just to show them that what they've done has worked. Well done, congratulations. So we don't say at the end of the course, that's it, see you later. It's, hey, we'll see you next Tuesday for a coffee. Any Tuesday, come in while the course run. Have a coffee, play in the garden.
And like anyone who has met the black dog and come out the other side, Red knows his triggers now.
I know it's happening because I wake up and it's not like I'm sad. I just go very quiet, I've noticed. You know, I'm walking to work here, I just go, morning, how are yous? And then they know straight away what's going on. Yep, okay, so Red will grab a cup of coffee and he'll go down the back and walk around the pine trees and look for feathers off the cockies or something like that for 20 minutes, come back, and now I'm set to try and start working through the day. And they're really, really, really on board with it. They understand totally.
To some, a nursery is a place to buy plants, but for others, it's a safe haven.
This is a lifesaver. That's the only way to put it. It has been a lifesaver. Yeah.
And how about Mrs. Red?
Oh, she's a legend. She has just been through every step of every injury, every illness, every mental bout, the nightmares. I don't think I could find another one like her. Not for me. She's just perfect.
If she were a plant, which one would she be?
Oh, she'd be my aniseed Veronia. My aniseed Veronia for sure.
That was Red, a.k.a. Matt Loney, Navy veteran turned gardener at the Australian Native Nursery. And they always need more volunteers if you too need some fresh air. He did say they're yet to meet any ex-Air Force vets, so pass that on.
When news breaks...
Somebody was being pursued by police.
Everyone in the area that I was in just dropped everything and ran.
If it's relevant to you...
I kind of stood there in some shock and surprise.
720 ABC Radio Perth.
This is Roots and Shoots with Sabrina and Amber. Sarah is in Les Murdy. Hi, Sarah. What's your question for Sab?
Yes. Hello. A first-time caller, so, yeah, it's pretty
Congratulations.
Exciting.
We promise we'll be nice to you.
We'll be so gentle on you, honestly,
we've
Sarah.
We've actually been listening to the podcast, so I've been learning things, which is wonderful. So I've just got one question. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I've got a number of questions, but one question. we've just moved into a new house, mm-hmm. and we have grass out the back, grassed area. It's lots of weeds, so mm-hmm. we're just going to mow it, keep all the weed tops and put it in the bin.
Yes.
As I think you've said before. But also I was just digging about in it a little bit and I found these little black, dark grey beetles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering what they are and if they're going to cause a problem, yeah, or how to get rid of weeds in the grass.
Okay, so
weeds in the grass as well. So there's a couple of things going on there.
Okay, so now the beetles, everyone immediately panics and thinks that they've got black lawn beetle, and then they pour really terrible pesticide, insecticide on it that if your pets or your kids are barefooted, it's actually absorbed through the tissue in your feet. So don't go down right. that track. Right. There's lots of different beetles, and if you encourage birds into your garden, particularly things like magpies, they yep. will knock off, they'll take out 60 beetles a day.
Right. So I've noticed we've had a because we're in Lesmerdy, so we have birds.
Yes, great.
We've got like we've got a resident magpie.
Yes, perfect.
So he's been about, and Kookaburra, who's very regular.
Yep.
But he's not going to eat that, I guess. But also the 28 parrots. We've had like four of them on the lawn at once.
Yeah, the parrots are. Yeah, the parrots will be eating the root system of your lawn. But they. Oh. I don't. What I like to say is they aerate it. Now what you do to bring the beetles up to the surface, if you get an old sheet or some old cloth you lay down in the evening, you dampen it, you leave it there overnight. When you peel it back in the morning, the beetles will have come up for the moisture. Wow. And you can either hand pick them or call the magpies in to come and do the work for you. If you need to, I don't think it's going to be a problem. Because you would need a lot per square meter for it to be a problem. If it is, then you can use a neem oil drench. Now, the problem with weeds in your lawn is that you will probably have at least minimum 10 different species of weed, and to get a selective herbicide that targets those particular things but doesn't harm the lawn is going to be very tricky.
Right.
So you can either spot spray using a pelargonic oil, which is not a herbicide, it's a weed killer.
And that's okay for kids.
That's completely safe.
Pelargonic. Okay. Yeah,
pelargonic acid, which is the oil of geraniums, basically. Right. And the other thing is you've done the right thing. You've got to cut the heads off before they seed. And mow your lawn short. And don't put, because that'll cut the weeds off, the heads of the weeds off, or
just stop the seed.
Yeah, or your hand pull, Sarah.
Ooh. That's going to be a lot of.
Yeah, so you can spot spray with the pelargonic acid. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Good luck with
that.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you. Good luck, Sarah.
Erin is in North Perth, and I believe we've got a photo of Erin's front yard, which is pretty. Oh,
it's
pretty
very
gorgeous.
Pretty, and she's got some big roses.
Hi, Erin.
Hello, Erin.
Hello. Hi. Yes, my roses. I've got three standard roses at the front, but the middle one is not going too well. That
little it's one a little. There. Our first munting.
It's a runt, yes.
Wow, we've got a munting.
We've got a munted runt.
First munting of the day.
I'm not sure if it's the graft that's coming through and I pruned it too much or what's going on.
And so if it's the graft that's coming through, they'll have thinner leaves and there'll be three, they're triangular leaves.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So that's a rootstock and be sort of thin and wispy. Can be that the graft hasn't taken very well and so it'll be poorly. Is there any cracking around where the graft is?
No, not that I can see. Oh, actually, yes, maybe a little bit.
Ooh.
Yes.
Okay, so spray the entire rose with an anti-rot spray.
Okay.
See if that helps. Sometimes if it's the root system or it's the graft itself, it will just be a munted thing for most of its life. So,
okay, it has been in the past like the other two.
It's on the downhill run.
Yeah.
You know what? I'd be pulling that out in case there's something that will infect the other two roses.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. I'd be worried about the spread of infection.
They look nice and symmetrical as they are for my two cents worth.
I think so too.
Okay. All right.
She likes things in groups of three, I can tell.
Aaron,
three. Anyway, just go and buy another one. Gives you an excuse to go to the nursery and you might find other plants that you want to bring in.
That's good.
I think so.
Have a lovely time at the nursery. Thanks, Aaron. Couple of texts meant to send this in earlier this week. Are you able to identify this beetle for me? Decimating my roses but gives me lots of therapy hand-picking them off the bushes, says Aaron Lee in Mount Helena. Oh, it looks like a stink bug.
No.
It's not a stink bug?
That's actually a that's an Australian cockroach.
Oh, hang on. What's that then? Is she talking about those little fellas?
Ah, the little fellas. Well, that's what the cockroach is doing, eating those little fellas. So they're an aphid.
Yes.
So you've got an Australian cockroach eating the Australian aphids. So, but that's not, the aphids are suckers, not chewers. So it's not the thing, it's not the cockroach eating the bush. That's actually caterpillars, grasshoppers, or I'd say it's grasshoppers. So that big beetle that you see there, which isn't a beetle, which is a cockroach, is no problem whatsoever. The aphids you can squish with your fingers or leave it for the cockroach to eat. But those chew marks are not done by the cockroach. So don't harm it. Might be too late. Could also be the native bee. Because that's a lovely circular shape, and that's on a rose, and you get the leaf cutter bee, which is a beautiful native bee, chews a perfectly circular hole in the leaf, rolls it up like a cigar, like it's going down to the bar with the boys, and they lay their babies in there. It's a little nest.
Oh.
And I think it's nice to share with cockroaches and leaf cutter bees.
Debbie is in Waikiki with a philodendron. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, how are you?
You're good, Debbie.
That's good. Thanks for having me. I've got a philodendron that's about 50 centimetres high, 60 centimetres high.
Yep.
I don't know how to propagate it or cut it. It's just got like a big stalk.
Yep.
And, like, the first leaf now is about halfway up.
Okay. Well, you cut its head off.
Hey?
You're going to cut its head off. Now, what you'll be left with is a stalk and nothing else. You'll have a stalk. No, you have nothing.
It'll look dead and dry and horrible.
Well, it will look dead, dry and horrible, but if you put it in where it gets a bit more light, it's going to shoot leaves further down that dead, dry-looking stalk. I promise you. Either that or it will die, Debbie.
You can do it, Debbie. Yeah.
No. No, it won't die. It won't die. Honestly, I know it sounds...
It won't die.
No. Either that,
but it doesn't look like it's got any like nodes that might shoot because it looks dead. But that's okay.
Oh, the whole thing.
What do I do with the top bit?
Oh yeah, well you can plant the top bit, and you've got a new plant.
Can.
Yeah, absolutely. You do it at the same time. Should cut the head off.
So then, when that shoots again at the bottom dead bit, then what?
It's not actually dead.
Okay.
Mm.
It's not. No, it's not.
Because if the stalk was dead, you'd have no leaves at all.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, true.
So it's not dead. Okay, cool. It's just laying there going, I wish you'd cut the head off this so I can shoot down the bottom.
There you go.
And make a new plant so I can cut it wherever then.
Yep, absolutely.
So don't be scared is what you're saying.
Do not be scared, Debbie.
Feel the fear.
Gird your loins.
Do it anyway.
Put your big girly panties on. Go and prune that head off.
And I'll just say I loved hearing that PTSD story too.
Thanks, Debbie.
That makes, like I thought I was into plants because I'm getting old, but it's not true. So
there you go.
It's therapy.
Nature is healing for everything.
Awesome.
Thanks, Debbie. Love your secateurs out, girl. go and chop it off. Robert is in Dianella and he has everlasting seeds. Hello, Robert.
Yeah, good morning, ladies. Yeah, with the everlasting flower,
I've
read two articles. One says the petal is the seed to grow the next crop, or is it the actual bulb of the flower itself?
No. It's the centre part. It's the centre part, not the petals. It's the centre part of the plant, which is, so the petals are the outside and the seed is on the inside. So you just take the whole head off and the seed will drop out.
Okay, same as I got poppies in my garden. I just wait for the bulb to dry, and then I crush them, and
that's it.
Out come 100 little seeds.
That's exactly it, Robert. You've nailed it. You've got it in one.
Okay, no, cause there's a lot of them around on the verge around the area. I thought I'd go and pick a few for next year.
Absolutely.
And
then the garden. Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Thanks, Robert. Okay. Bye.
Thanks for that. Enjoy your day.
Thank you.
Dave is in Leschenault. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, good morning, ladies. How are you today?
We are exceptionally good because it's perfect gardening day and all the ants are going to come out of the ground.
So I hear. My question is, I have a mulberry tree.
Yes.
That would be 7 years old. Now, it was from across the road that we striked it.
Yep.
Every year it's loaded with mulberries.
Yeah.
And then they all fall off.
Oh, they don't ripen.
They don't ripen. And I was just wondering, could it be a mineral deficiency or...?
It could be. It could be nutrient deficiency, not enough potassium or trace elements. So you could fairly woof it up with the trace elements and potassium. So some sulfate of potash around the base. And that's probably going to help it keep the fruit until it ripens.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you do that as soon as the leaves start emerging.
Okay. Right. Oh well, I'll give that a go and see whether I can get some fruit.
Good luck with that, Dave.
You know how we're doing on the 20th the Great Aussie Bird Count.
Yes.
So in that count, there's also a thing called Vote for Your Favourite Bird of the Year, which BirdLife Australia is also running. So we want people to be involved in the Vote for Your Favourite Bird. If people could vote for the Borden Cockatoo, which is highly endangered, about to go extinct, the more people that vote for the Borden Cockatoo is their favourite bird, we might get some action from the government on trying to save them.
Excellent. We will flog you with that for the next however many weeks.
Yep.
Cecilia is in Lesmurdy. Hello, Cecilia.
Hello, I'm Amber and...
what's her name?
What's her name? Yep. I answer to anything.
Sorry, Sabrina.
That's great. That's quite all right.
I must apologise for bringing up a citrus question.
That's all right. We haven't had one today. Sorry. You're it.
I found gall wasp and I've never seen it before.
Mm.
And I had a look and I thought, oh, that doesn't look good. Cut it off.
Yep.
And then I just kept going for the next couple of hours had this huge box load of cuttings.
Yep.
Now, unfortunately, it's this lemon is near orange trees and a mandarin, but then we have other fruit trees there as well, and I'm just freaked out. And
yeah.
We have the chooks nearby and the bees, and I'm just freaked out, so I don't want to be spraying anything.
No, well, nothing works. I haven't got a spray that works for citrus gall wasp anyway. So it's only going to attack your citrus trees. Unfortunately, the only method that's available at the moment is to cut the galls out, to heat treat them in black plastic if you can for two weeks and then dispose of it in the green waste bin. It's not going to – the gall wasp won't go to anything else. It's just going to be on your citrus. And unfortunately, Cecilia, that is the only thing that you can do.
Oh, God.
I'm so
condolences.
Sorry. And encourage your neighbours to control it as well.
Ah, yes.
That's the big thing.
Thank you, Sabrina.
Okay. Thanks, Cecilia.
Thank you, Cecilia. Now, the jobs we had for our people were to be citizen science between October 20 and 26.
Yes.
To record the bird sounds.
Yes.
And then what do you do with that?
The Great Aussie Bird Count. It's on the app. You just click send. at the end of your 20 minutes and they collate all that information. Then the other thing people have to do is vote for their favourite bird of the year. We're hoping it will be the Borden's cockatoo for everyone in Western Australia.
Everyone in Western Australia, and hopefully that might get some national attention on how we've just continued to go on destroying the habitat of that poor thing. We talk about it every week. It is a great tragedy that out of any bureaucrat's mouth could come the words, we'll manage it to extinction. It does strike me as terribly cynical. Anyway, for a joyful hour with you, it seems like a sad way to end the conversation. It's coming up to news at 10 o'clock. Sabrina Hunt, thank you.
Happy gardening.
Thanks for listening. You can join us live on Saturdays from 9 o'clock.
Head to abc.net.au/Perth.
Or listen on your radio to ABC Perth on DAB Plus or 720 AM.
You can text your questions in on 0437 922 720.
Call us in the studio on 1300 222 720. Roots and Shoots will be back midweek to answer more of your gardening questions. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating.
And share the episode with all your friends.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.